Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Buchady, and Chiefs Hall of Famer Tim Grunhard, who demands to start a segment by congratulating St. Pius X High School and wishing them nothing but good luck.
Absolutely.
In the state championship game, Class 3 state championship game tomorrow at 11 o'clock at Mizzou.
At Mizzou, good. They don't have to drive all the way over to St. Louis like we did back when.
That's right.
I won the state championship in 2001 with my guys. Or no, was it 2002? 2002 with my guys. The Simone brothers were both on that team.
Who was on the call of the game, though, is more important.
Were you on the call of that game?
Damn right I was.
How did I miss that?
Because I was way up in the top of the dome.
Oh.
You know?
Well, you didn't show any favoritism. You were not the Joe Buck. You were not Joe Buck, were you? San Francisco Giants.
No, absolutely, I showed favoritism. Okay. And I continue to this day. But yeah, they play. We're all gonna. My girls are in the St. Pius, the grade school basketball. They have a preseason tournament for all the Northland Catholic schools,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
And so we were supposed to play Saturday morning.
St. Gabe's rocks.
And that's right. They won last night in the first round. Let's go. And they adjusted all the schedules, and they started the tournament early last night. So all the grade school kids and their families can go to Columbia.
Ah, great.
And, you know, the twins, they're going to be at Pius in a year and a half,
wow.
And they can't wait. So we're all going to pile in the car at 7 a.m. and head down to Columbia to support St. Pius.
Awesome. Now, is St. Gabe's and St. Teresa's a big rivalry?
You know, we don't play. It's one, but we play in basketball. Our rival's probably St. Pat's.
Oh, St. Pat's. Okay.
Play St. Andrews a lot. Play St. James a lot. Oak Hill. We don't play St. Teresa a whole bunch.
You think it's right there, right? You guys are pretty close.
Hey, you know
to
what?
Each other.
Well, like they say, like Boise State, you say any place, anytime, anywhere.
There
let's
you
go.
Go. Call
let's
out.
Go.
Calling them out right now.
That's right.
St. Teresa's, you're being called out from St. Gabe's.
Not exactly, wow. But that's fine. I've been called out by St. Teresa several times, which is a whole other story.
I've been called out from
that
a
was
lot
the
of
high school, by the way.
Yeah.
Like, hey, it's an all stay away from this school. It's all girls.
And, okay, I called out. Like, get out.
Right. No, we went to a mixer there one time.
Oh, you're talking about St. Teresa's,
yeah.
The high school.
Right. No, I'm just saying, I changed to the high school. Yeah. Me and Tom went to a mixer there, and it just didn't.
You just didn't, you know.
You added a little spice to that mixer.
Well, I'm not finishing the story. I can promise you that.
Were the Rockhurst guys bowing up on you, Pius guys?
Nobody bows up on Tom.
No, okay.
So
that's a
bad career move.
Yeah.
You bow up on me all you want, and Tom like, what is that?
as we talk about the politics and the rivalries of the Northland Catholic Schools.
Let's go. Timmy, why did you chase your coach to Louisiana? Can I ask you that?
LSU.
Did you see he has a southern accent now?
I heard, yeah.
Tremendous.
I just read that on Twitter. I was looking at some news feeds on Twitter. And
it's genuine.
He's got an accent on. Well, he's Ed Ogeron. He'll never have that kind of accent. That will never happen.
He could. I want to hear Brian Kelly doing Hummer commercials.
Right.
I got to give myself a Hummer.
He's the other. Hi, everybody.
There's a difference between a. See, I heard a southern accent. That's there's a difference between a southern accent and a Creole accent.
New Orleans is different.
Yes.
It's not the straight
up
South. It's
kind of
South.
I don't know Brian Kelly. You do.
I do.
And I'm just telling you, people from the outside looking in don't like him. And I have felt that way. Like, there's been things like, I don't think I like that guy very much.
I didn't really like him very much the first 5 or 6 years he's at Notre Dame. I thought that he...
It took a while to warm up.
I thought he embarrassed some of his players on national TV, especially his quarterbacks. He ruined a lot of quarterbacks. But he had a kind of a come to Jesus in 2016 when Jack Schwarberg, who is now his boss.
That's the right place to have a come to Jesus,
right.
Notre Dame.
Jesus was already there.
He was saying touchdown, and he said, come here, come here. And he said, listen, you need to straighten your ass out.
Was Jesus actually involved in this?
Jesus was always, well, you know, his mother is up on the on the dome, and you always listen to your mother. So,
that's exactly
you know,
right. She's his final say on every hire
absolutely,
in the football program.
Absolutely. When your mother tells you to do something, you do it. But he became more of a CEO type of a coach and a little bit kinder, gentler, and he really treated Colin well. So, I mean, as a parent, I appreciated Brian Kelly, and you know he let my kid play.
Are you mad that he left though?
I'm disappointed in the way he left, but I'm not mad he left. I mean, he was there 12 years, and he got to the point where, you know. Here's the deal: he went in September after the Wisconsin game, and went to Jack Schwarberg and said, hey, "Listen, I'd like to have an extension. I have 3 years left in his contract. I'm 60 years old. I kind of probably like to work till I'm 70. I'd like to stay here at Notre Dame, but I'd like an extension and like a raise. I want to be paid like Saban type of money." And
did he ask for the raise in a Southern accent?
I don't know. Okay. Probably not. Probably more of in a Chicago / Indiana accent. So Jack Schwarberg, who's a interesting cat himself, said, "Listen, you know, let's talk about it. He kind of slow played it, and you know, I think, and we had Tim Prister on from Irish Illustrated, and he didn't quite agree with me, but I kind of know the politics of Notre Dame just as well as he does, and I think what happened is they went to some of the big boosters. Listen, you guys know as well as I do, Coach Drinkowitz from Missouri, Coach Leipold from Kansas, those guys are getting paid, but they get paid really through boosters. I mean, the alumni and the boosters, and those are the guys that pay these big money contracts to these players.
Boosters like Nate.
Like Nate. Nate paid most of Leipold's contract.
A chunk of it, whatever.
So I don't think that...
Kansas, we like to pay buyouts more than we do coaches.
Wow. Yeah, that's part of the process.
Man, we pay coaches to go away more than we do to come to us.
But I think he went to some of the top four or five guys who were going to have to pay, and they're like, "Listen, now let's see how this all works out for over 3 years. We want to win a national championship here. Coach has done a great job of getting us to the playoffs. Coach has done a great job of you know getting Notre Dame relevant again. But we want to win a national championship because that's what you want to do at Notre Dame, and we're not quite sure this guy is able to do it." And to make a long story short, they said, "You know, Adam, we're not going to give you the kind of money that you want to pay this guy." And this is my opinion. This is my conjecture, just from what I know about the school. And Jack Schwarberg's kind of slow played it a little bit. And then in October, when LSU and Ed Orgeron, you know, cut bait and he left, and then the USC job came open. Armstrong, I think it's Trace Armstrong, who is their agent, is the agent for both Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly. I think he started to put feelers out, and I think both schools had interest in both of those coaches. And I think Lincoln Riley didn't really want to mess with the SEC for one reason or another. I'm not quite sure why.
It just means more.
He just didn't want it because I don't think that he wanted to be a part of that transition from Oklahoma to the SEC. And so he went to USC, where I think he thinks that the route to a national championship is a little bit easier at USC. That's debatable, but that's kind of what I think he thought. And then the LSU job came open, and Brian Kelly thinks, listen, if Saban can win a national championship there, which, you know, Saban's the number one dog right now. He's the best coach of college football. But Les Miles can win a national championship at LSU, and Ed Orgeron can win a national championship at LSU. I think Brian Kelly feels that he can win a national championship at LSU because of the track record of those coaches, and he's getting paid $95 to $100 million, which is not a bad payday.
Are you happy Marcus Freeman's the new coach?
Very happy. Listen, they hired the right guy. Now, I am a little nervous about a guy in his first head coaching job as a head coach at Notre Dame. That's a lot of pressure. It's an interesting proposition to be the first time, but the players and the recruits all wanted him. He's keeping like 11 or 12 of the assistant coaches, which meant that there wasn't a lot of turnover, and those guys wanted to stay. The guy played at Ohio State. He knows how to win. He's been a winner. He played for 6 years in the NFL. He understands football. He knows what it takes to win. So I think a lot of the ex-players, the one thing that Brian Kelly really never did, and even as a parent and an ex-player, he was not a guy that kind of reached out to the ex-players for support or slash, advice or slash, just involving those guys. Some coaches do, some coaches don't. He didn't. Marcus Freeman, in all indications, is going to reach out to the ex-players, and he wants those guys to get back involved again. A lot of times, coaches don't want those guys back in. Sometimes it's more headache than it's worth. But Marcus Freeman is one of those guys who wants those guys back in. You know, like Jerome Bettis is a guy that really has fallen kind of away from Notre Dame as far as, Brian Kelly and that relationship. And there's also, I can go down the list of guys that just didn't feel like. Now, Brian Kelly's players itself, for the 12 years, so they were welcomed back into the fold. But some of the older guys weren't. I don't really particularly care one way or the other, but there's guys out there that do. And so Marcus Freeman has checked all the right boxes, and I think he's going to be a very, very good coach. But at Notre Dame, you win 8-9 games, that's not good enough.
Uh-oh.
So he's going to have to continue to win 10 or 11 games a year, and that's a lot of pressure. And this year, listen, the last couple of years, Notre Dame's schedule, the opponents have been down. The ACC hasn't been great. It's been real top-heavy. So they always have to play those ACC games. And then they USC's been down. And then they play Navy. So there was a built-in, kind of built into the recipe or cooked into the recipe was about 8 or 9 wins for Notre Dame. And really all he had to do is win 1 or 2 big games each year in order to get to where he needed to be. We'll see how that works out for Marcus Freeman.
If he only wins 8 or 9 games over the next couple of years, he'll lose his job in time for Urban Meyer to get fired by Jacksonville, and then he can come. There's good bars. There's good bars in South Bend. That job could fall right into his lap.
I don't know if he's up for the grind that it is coaching.
That's crossing the line.
That's
so tell
stuff.
Me this.
Thank you.
That will never happen.
Will the Chiefs beat the dog crap out of the Broncos?
Yay! Let's talk a little
Do
bit about that.
Do you think they will?
I don't think they will beat the dog crap.
Hey, real quick, before we move on, real quick, just about like you just what you said about Freeman and not being a head coach. Mm-hmm. Like we were talking with Lebo about this. The best coaching hires that Oklahoma's made in the history of their program have all been guys that were coordinators and then became head coaches for the first time at Oklahoma, which is a blue blood program. Mm-hmm. It you don't have to be. Because I know, my frame of reference at Kansas, Mark Mangino was the best hire in my lifetime. He was the defensive coordinator. Yeah. But people could say, well, that's Kansas. Notre Dame's got a much better prestige and all that. But big programs like Oklahoma have had success hiring guys that are coordinators.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of examples of that. And Lincoln Riley is one of those, too. And
Bob Stoops was.
He's 35 years old. He's a very successful defensive coordinator. He's got an unbelievably infectious personality, and the guys like him. So I think it's a great hire. I'm not upset about it. I just think that your first head coaching job, there's got to be inherently some pressure at Notre Dame. But I'm not saying that, oh my gosh, I shouldn't have hired him because it's his first head coaching job, because I agree with you. Look, if there's some coaches in the NFL right now that are 34, 35, 36 years old,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing a pretty good job. I can think of a couple right now. You got the guy from the Rams. You got the guy from in Green Bay. Nagy with the Bears was younger when he got the job. Mm. So, they can get that done. And really what happened with Marcus Freeman staying, and now 12 coaches, I believe, on that staff have decided to stay. Probably could have got paid more money at LSU to go. I know for a fact Tommy Reese got offered $400,000 more to go to USC and said no thank you.
That's big.
But, listen, he probably got a raise because he said no thank you. I'm not, and he's probably now over 7 figures as a coordinator, which is crazy. but he said no. And that to me says a lot that a lot of those guys and listen, it's all about consistency and continuity with college football. The recruiting process, you have consistency and continuity. You have that same message. You have a guy that has got an infectious personality in Marcus Freeman. I really and truly think that this guy – and listen, Notre Dame got a 5-star defensive end commit the day that he said yes. So it's already paying off.
Why won't Nate let you talk about the Chiefs?
I don't know.
Let's go. Let's talk Chiefs.
He's still mad about the soccer that you confronted him with. Timmy walked in there. He goes, "Hey, I know." And then you,
I made a list.
You let him have it.
I made a list. I don't know if we have time.
You let him have it, didn't you?
I did.
What kind of list are we talking here?
A list of things that I think the Chiefs need to do to make that run to go to the Super Bowl. I made a top 10 list. Now the last one, because I was doing American Shaman deals. You know, it has to do with Mary Shaman, number one. But let's go through this list real quick. And I want you guys
You
want
to break and get it ready? We'll pump. Okay,
let's take a break. Take a break, and I want to go through this list, and I want you guys to let me know what you think. If you think that, yeah, Grenny, you're right on here, or Grenny, you're an idiot, which is fine.
How about this?
I've been called that before.
Let's take a break, and let's consume some American Shaman products.
Let's do it.
And let's fill ourselves with the delicious products and see that. Then see what we say.
You know
that
what?
Can be fun.
You know what? I have a little anxiety about this list, so I'm going to get some water soluble, and it'll take that anxiety right away.
Put that in my coffee. We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, and Tim Grunhard. So, Timmy, I just showed you the game-winning touchdown play from the St. Pius Cardinal Ritter game. You've seen enough football, and it looked like...
They're happy, they're peppy, they fight with all their might.
Let's go!
Rah, 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 let's get in a fight. Rah, 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 rah,
look at this
guy. Golden white.
See, we're Sartans, we're warriors, we fight with all our might. Right. We're preppy, we're happy, we wear the golden white. Right. Nothing can stop us from any golden sight. Hey!
Wow. There you go. See, I know that song.
We're sexy, we're mighty, we're the class of 1990. What? There was a man from Nantucket. My dad told me that one. And so good luck to St. Pius tomorrow. I'll be there in Columbia. Let's go. Now, Timmy, the Denver Broncos, you don't like them, do you?
I'm not a big fan. In fact, this to me is the rivalry. You know, they always talk about the Vegas Raiders. But I think that this is the rivalry. At least I felt that way when I was playing. I felt like, you know, because we really had the Raiders number, that the Denver Broncos and John Elway were the rivalry. Whether the Chiefs still feel that way or not, because they've had a lot of success.
11 in a row.
Denver. But here, I want to read you guys a couple things. And
top
let me
10.
Know. Well, let me tell you. So number 10 is keep Chris Jones at defensive tackle. He dominates the pocket. He just hurts run fits. He's so good at getting penetration. The defensive line has played so much better since he moved inside. Thoughts? Agree, disagree?
Right. Look, absolutely. Yeah. And he was, and not just being out of position early on, the wrist. I mean, that's a tough injury for a defensive tackle because you use your hands so much to try to play through. And not only is he healthier, but he's playing in the right position. Absolutely.
Right. I disagree.
Disagree. Wow.
I say 80-20.
80-20.
At defensive tackle. I think that throwing a changeup out there every once in a while keeps the offense off balance. They can't scheme up their blocking schemes as well to account exactly for where he is. That's what I always thought was so amazing about, like, you know, the defensive lines that the Raiders had with Howie Long. You didn't know where he was going to line up. And he has a better chance of blowing up a play if you're not sure. And I actually think he wins out on the edge more often than people give him credit for. I don't want him playing out there the majority of the time.
So you like the 80-20. Listen.
Yeah. I just as a changeup.
Yeah.
You know, as a changeup. But I think predominantly. So, I mean, I'm just disagreeing with you a little bit.
Yeah. No, that's
fair?
Hey, listen. I don't have any issue with him playing a couple plays out there, you know, maybe third down situation or anything else. But consistently he needs to be inside because I think he plays much better.
I agree with that.
All right. Number 9. Establish a third wide receiver. Hill and Kelsey are great. They're doing an unbelievable job. But for the Chiefs to get to where they need to go, offensively especially, and we want them to go to the Super Bowl, they need to develop a third receiver. Who is that going to be? Will it be Pringle? Will it be Robinson?
Should they sign Josh Gordon?
Will it be Gordon? Who do you think? Is there? Can they? Is that an issue?
If there is one, it's Pringle.
Pringle?
I don't think there is one.
I want it to be Josh Gordon, but every week I want it to be, and it never is. Do you think it could be after the bye week? I'm asking
Gordon?
You. Yeah.
I hope so. I mean, they signed the guy. He's got a lot of talent.
I just
don't understand. Yeah, maybe he just didn't understand the offense.
But he's playing a lot. But should I just stop waiting for him to have some kind of breakout?
No, he's on the team. You got to use him. So, I mean, if you're going to sign him, find a way to use him. So, I agree with you. I think Gordon, you know,
he's out there for a lot of snaps.
It would be huge. They need to develop a third receiver. You can't win consistently and make that run to the Super Bowl with really two options in the passing game. You got to have another one. Whether it's a running back out of the backfield like they've done, whether it's Hilaire, whether it's Williams, whether it's Pringle, whether it's Robinson, whether it's Gordon, they just got to find another option. Number eight, the offensive line's got to keep developing. Communication's got to keep consistent. They got to keep the pocket deep and wide. I'm a little concerned with the tackles and pass protection, but the guys inside and Creed Humphrey and Smith have done an unbelievable job. I think they're great, great football players. They're going to be great football players for a long time, but we've got to be more consistent in pass protection with our tackles. Thoughts on that?
What's going to happen to right tackle going forward? Now that Niang's back, what's the depth chart look
like? Well, Niang didn't practice yesterday, so he's not quite back yet. Wiley, I thought, competed really, really well against the Raiders. I thought he struggled against the Cowboys. So, you know, listen, he's a good filler. He's a good guy to have to come off the bench. But they need to get one of those other guys healthy. And that's going to come up here in a second with the importance of this list of health. But number seven, this is the Frank Bull. It's the Frank Bull theory. Do not take the ball out of the end zone on kickoffs in special teams. Just let the ball come out to the 25. Too many bad things happen when you take it out. And all of a sudden, next thing you know, you're starting first down and 10 inside the 10-yard line because of a block in the back or a hold or whatever. So in special teams also, Butker's just got to be more consistent with his extra points because those are the kind of things that will kill you when you're in a close game or a playoff game. You got to make extra points. Thoughts on special teams? Do you tell the guys, hey, listen, let's take it up the 25-yard line and go from there?
Okay, before I tackle that football question, yeah. Dave Tobe yesterday said Mike Hughes will be the punt returner moving forward over Mecole Hardman. That's done.
Yeah.
Just
more consistent.
Is that good?
Yeah. I think Mecole Hardman has the bigger play ability, but he makes some bonehead decisions back there sometimes. We saw it in the playoff game. We saw it in the Super Bowl where, you know, just kind of, you know, loses concentration, and you can't do that back there.
Fielding punts is hard.
Yes.
And the most important job, and I guess this kind of goes to what you're saying about kick returns too, it's great to get a couple big plays in special teams that can flip the momentum in games and all that stuff. But with this team, job number one is make sure that Patrick Mahomes gets the ball. You know, you can't fumble punts. You catch the ball if that's it, or don't touch it at all. And Hardman, it's hard to trust him. You're just afraid all the time that he's going to fumble the punt, or you know he's going to muff the punt, or he's going to get hit and fumble the ball. And to me, the risk versus reward there, the number one job is make sure that Patrick Mahomes gets to go take the field.
So Hughes is going to be the punt returner moving forward. So I'm reaching for things, mm-hmm. grasping at straws. The fact that they're taking that off his plate and say, okay, Mecole, don't worry about punt return. That you have nothing to do with it now.
Does he
fit
in?
Could that help him as a receiver? Could that help him in the offense?
Let's hope so. I mean, they need him.
You looked away from me, so I don't.
I just watched Patrick Mahomes and his body language. He just does not look happy when he throws the ball to Mecole Hardman. Does he?
I don't look happy when he throws the ball to Mecole Hardman.
He doesn't either.
You know?
When I
see him throwing it to Tyreek Hill, I'm expecting like something wonderful to happen. Like, oh, you know, he's... And when he throws it to Mecole Hardman, I'm nervous... until Mecole Hardman is tackled and the whistle blows and the play is over and he's walking back to the huddle. The whole time I'm like, oh, God.
I don't think you're the only one.
Okay.
All right. So
I just feel like Mecole Hardman is a valuable player on this team to get the ball in his hands a few times through jet sweeps and little wide receiver screens and things where it doesn't require much down the field and then just let him use his speed. He can have a few big plays for you every game doing that, mm-hmm. but to expect him to be a guy that's going to like run the whole route tree, and I just feel like that ship has sailed.
What's next?
Number six, Patrick Mahomes. Take what is given. Do not force the issue. Trust your instincts. He's even said that at times he sees too much, at times he doesn't see enough. I think he needs to just get back to trusting his instincts, trusting his football ability, and just take what is given. When you play in these games, and you're going to have it this week against Denver, because this defensive coordinator slash head coach for the Denver Broncos is a smart cookie. He is a good, good defensive mind. And he's going to have something that he's going to give Patrick Mahomes, and he's going to have something he's going to take away from Patrick Mahomes. Patrick's got to figure that out and manipulate and take the ball and move it down the field with what's being given to him. And eventually, you will have some of those big plays, but you cannot force, I repeat, you cannot force the ball down the field if it's not there.
Yes. And I remember that when what game was it after? Was it after the Green Bay game when I played those comments from Patrick Mahomes where he said, and it was very revealing to me. And he said, and he doesn't call anyone out. He goes, this game was important because now I know that the defense gets stops. Now I know our punter can punt it down inside the 10-yard line. See, he was saying before, he didn't know that. He didn't believe that. He didn't have faith in that. He has faith in the defense. He has faith in the special teams. So he doesn't feel like he has to throw a 50-yard touchdown pass every play. So that helps him be more reasonable within the offense of taking what the defense gives them and not forcing things, right?
And I think a little bit of the trust factor, too. And once again, I don't think you'll ever admit to this, but I just want you all to think about it just for a second. He throws the ball sometimes so hard that it just bounces off a guy's hands and chest and heads and everything else. And the quarterbacks that I have played with over the years, you could tell when they don't quite trust, they throw it a little bit harder. And they're just trying to get it there in there.
Who did that?
It's quick. You know, Montana did it. Gerback did it. Rich Gannon did it. You know, when they're trying to make something happen, even on some of the shorter passes, when they're like, you know, I got to get this ball and I got to get in there. And a lot of times they'll just pick up the speed and throw that fastball and it'll bounce off of a guy's chest or something else. And I think that's part of the trust factor that the Chiefs are getting better at. Yeah, they had a, you know, Travis had one bounce off his hands in the Cowboy game. But I think that's, you know, part of that whole, this whole year of this kind of, you know, building this offense up to a point where it can be as dominant as it was. You know, Patrick needs to trust his receivers that they're going to make those plays.
But why didn't you say Bono?
I forgot.
Right.
All
right. We have to break. We have to break now. In the middle,
we got a break now.
Right, because we split it up. We went. Okay. We baited the hook.
All right.
Now
mm-hmm.
we want these listeners to
now
bite.
We get to the top five.
Right,
so
to bite on this worm. Right. Nate, bite on this worm.
I'm gonna let you guys. Have number one because my number one was I'm going to tell you what it was because it you know because what we were doing it? An American Shaman. Yeah. I said, you know, the Chiefs should really be using American Shaman products. But so we need to come
I'll do
up
that.
With a different.
Maybe they are.
One.
That's fine.
Yeah.
We'll be back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John, Nate Buchady, and Tim Gunhart. Okay, Grunny, where did we leave off? Was that six? Were we at
five? Left off at six.
Okay, what's five?
Number five, and I just saw it on ESPN that Antonio Brown and a couple other guys have been suspended for faking some vax cards, which is
stupid.
I don't get it. So number five for me was steer clear of COVID. You know, the Chiefs have got to.
That's number one for me,
yeah,
personally.
Yeah, it's got to get lucky. You got to get lucky. You got to be smart. But more than anything else, you just got to be lucky because you never know. I mean, you walk into a room and somebody's there that has COVID, and all of a sudden you have it, and you spread it to a couple other people, and then you have these protocols where you have your contact tracing deal. So, you know, just like any other team, but the Chiefs have got to, in this stretch, get mm-hmm. lucky, really, and steer clear of COVID. The Dallas Cowboys have, what, seven or eight guys in the organization that are had to sit out last night. So, yeah, that's number five for me. If you guys thoughts, I mean, I know you really can't control it. You can be vaccinated. Now, listen, I was vaccinated, and I still got it. It wasn't as bad, you know, but I got it. So if you have it, you got to sit out for 10 days, and that's a long time in the NFL, especially this time of the year.
We said before the season, if your quarterback and your stars are vaccinated, it's a competitive advantage, and that's proven to be true.
It has proven to be true, but it's also been proven now that you know you could still get it even.
But you can come back faster with under NFL guidelines if you're vaccinated.
Right.
What else you got?
All right, number four, win a turnover battle. This is very, very important this time of the year. You cannot turn the ball over. You got to cause turnovers. You know, you can't have, and Nate was talking a little bit before about, you know, kickoff returns or punt returns and you're fumbling the ball, or your ball bounces off a guy's hands and goes to the other guy. And, you know, you look last night, a defensive end for the Cowboys scored a pick six with just, you know, crazy situation. So, you know, listen, you can't always control it, but you can try to control the turnovers. And that's really important this time of the year. The turnover battle is huge. Number three is the running game. And I know this, don't say grunny, you're getting back to your old school Marty Ball.
Grunny.
But in December and now / January, in Kansas City and really in the NFL, you've got to be able to run the ball and run the ball consistently, because there's going to be some games where the weather is crappy, whether it's rain or whether it's wind. You go to Cincinnati and it's crappy weather, cold and windy. You got to be able to run the ball. And the other thing is, on the other side, you got to be able to stop the run. December, according to Marty Schottenheimer, and really according to a lot of the people that have been in the league for a long, long time, December is when you have to find a way to stop the run and run the ball a little bit more efficiently. And I think that that is something the Chiefs need to be better at. The first couple series of the game, they always seem to be able to run the ball pretty well, and then they kind of go away from it. In December and January, there's going to be times when you've got to have a four-minute attitude where you run the ball and you run the ball consistently.
What's the next one?
Number two, stay healthy just with injuries on the field. We saw it last year in the Super Bowl where the offensive line had four guys down. You can't live in that world. Now, once again, this is about luck. You know, somebody falls on your ankle or you push off and you tear Achilles. You can't control those things. But, you know, the Chiefs have just got to hopefully last year they got those that kind of the off the schneid with injuries, and maybe this year they can get through and to the Super Bowl without injuries. But that, to me, is just so important. And that leads into COVID. It leads into everything else. You just got to get lucky, and you got to take care of yourself.
Okay, so you said you waited to replace number one. I wanted to play this clip for you.
Okay.
From Steve Spagnuolo. I'm not saying this is number one, but I think this is important. I've loved watching what L'Jarius Sneed has turned into.
I agree.
It's very exciting, right? And I want you to listen in the comment on what Spags has to say about L'Jarius Sneed, because I think he's such an important player and such a key for this defensive resurgence we've seen in the last several weeks.
If you go back, if you remember, he was a corner, started those first two games for us, got hurt. And then Breland came back. How are we going to get a really good football player on the field? So we put him in nickel. That was his challenge. We've talked about this before. And he ran with that. And it was evident to us then that him closer to the ball was a good thing. And so when we made it in the offseason, you know, we didn't know who we had or weren't going to have, but we made this. I remember talking with Brett and Coach Reed about, you know, where should the pieces go? One, to keep him in there because of what you're talking about. If you have a guy that plays nickel and he's more than just a cover nickel, or, you know, a guy that, and you got a guy that will stick it in, you almost got like a half linebacker, half DB. So he, to his credit, he's done a really nice job with that.
He calls him like almost a half linebacker, half DB. And he can cover, but then they like him closer to the line of scrimmage. He could do a little bit of everything, but you hear Spags talking about him and how they use him. Tell me about the importance of his versatility and what he brings to this defense, the way he's playing right now.
It's really, really important. If you look at what Spags tries to do, and a lot of the stuff that he does, causes balls, the ball to bounce. And if your corners can't tackle, and we saw this a little bit with Marcus Peters, and I'm not trying to drag him through the mud any more than he's been dragged through the mud here in Kansas City. But, listen, the guy just didn't like to tackle, but he was a hell of a cover guy. And really, there's got to be a happy medium if you're going to play, especially for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I think in the NFL, a corner, you got to be willing to tackle, but you got to have the skills to cover. And Sneed does ball. He bought in to tackling. And the Chiefs have made this a point of emphasis in their draft. They made it a point of emphasis in the breakdown of free agents, of guys that will tackle at the safety and corner position. You got to be able to do that in the NFL nowadays. The way the defenses are constructed and the way the athleticism of running backs, they're going to be able to bounce and they're going to be able to get outside. And if you got a guy that's not willing to tackle on the edge, you're going to have some issues and you're going to have some soft spots and you're going to give up a lot of yards. And Snead does a really good job. And I think really the corners as a whole for the Kansas City Chiefs, do they have to, can they be better? Yeah, absolutely can be better. But they at least they buy in that they're not afraid to go in there and put their face mask in a guy's chest and wrap up and make a tackle.
And not only with Snead, but you talk about Willie Gay out there and Nick Bolton, right? That youth, that ability to cover ground against the run, especially with Bolton, he's terrific against the run. Willie Gay Jr., that upgrade he offers in athleticism and speed. I mean, you talk about Gay playing or Snead playing closer to the line. That makes a huge difference. You're seeing that that infused in, like you said, they focused in the draft, youth, the enthusiasm that they bring, the athleticism that they bring. That's been one of the main points in seeing this defense transform into a strength of this football team, right?
Absolutely. And, yeah, I think that these guys, it's just so important to have a coach like Spags that, that they could feed off of his personality. And I think this defense, I think defenses a lot of times, like under Gunther Cunningham, that defense took on the personality of their coordinator. I think the Chiefs with Sutton took on the personality of their coordinator. And I think that with Spags here, they've taken on that personality. Spags is a fiery guy. He's a overachiever. He really has done a great job in his career of staying hungry and developing his skills as a coach. And I think that the players see that, and I think they feed off of that. So this defense has really come a long way. And for one reason or another, Spags' defenses start out a little bit slow, and then they seem to get better as the season goes on, which is a good thing. But you remember the Super Bowl year. I mean, the Super Bowl year, the first six, seven games of the year, we thought there's no way this team's going to go anywhere with this defense. And they started getting better and better and better.
And healthier.
And healthier and healthier. And it's all connected. The defensive line getting pressure on the quarterback helps the secondary. The secondary covering helps the defensive line. And now that you have the athletic linebackers, we got Hitchin, who's kind of the coach on the field. And you have Gay and Bolton, who are both just unbelievably athletic linebackers that are getting better each game, that this defense is, the arrow is certainly pointing up.
Do you, when you were talking about Snead's willingness to tackle and hit people, the first person I thought of was Dale Carter. I always felt like he was that way. He seemed like he had zero regard for his own health and safety when he went out there and played.
In a lot of ways.
Yeah, wow. Off the field, we know that, too. We had a fascinating interview with him about that, actually, one time.
He's a great guy. Yeah. I mean, he has, he's doing a lot of great things.
Yeah, he's really changed his outlook on life.
I think a rock, man. Kevin Ross.
Yeah.
I mean, how good of a tackler was he?
Yeah, Kevin.
I guess I don't know if I'd look at the measurables. But Snead, and the reason I thought of Dale Carter is because they're both kind of that lanky, 6 foot, 190 pound guy that can run. But because I feel like Kevin Ross is like this sturdy, thick, guy.
Yeah. People don't remember that Dale Carter played a little bit of offense.
I was a big Tennessee fan back in those days, and I watched him play. Like, he played special teams, returned kicks. He was kind of like the way Aqib Talib was at KU, where they'd just get him the ball. But remember, he played some safety for the Chiefs early on, too, right?
Yeah, he did. And when he played offense, I'll never forget, because he literally he'd be cutting corners and he'd be cutting safeties, like going down and cutting them. And those guys were losing their proverbial minds that another corner was going out there, wide receiver. And I remember in my mind's eye here, I could see him getting chased by the I think it was Atwater or one of the Denver Broncos corners or safeties that were chasing him back to the huddle, all upset, and he's just laughing and giggling, and that was just his attitude. He was a tough sucker. He really was. Now, he was crazy.
He was a wild man.
Off the field and on the field, but he was always this a guy that you could trust. On the field, I'm talking about, you always knew he was going to give you 110%. He may come into practice not 110%, but he would at least give 110%. Those were fun days, and that's a good comparison. But I think Snead is, really come a long way, and that kid is going to be a really, really good corner for a long time in the NFL.
How's the game play out? What's the score going to be?
I think it's going to be 24-17. The Chiefs will win by 7. I think it'll be a little bit closer than people think. The Denver Broncos are a good defense. They're going to try to run the ball. Who's their running back? Williams. They have Gordon, who's one of the guys, and then Javonte Williams. By the way, Javonte Williams right now, and I know we got to get out of here, Javonte Williams has more broken tackles and missed tackles than anybody since 2006 when Marshawn Lynch was doing it. So you got to tackle.
You say 24-17, I say 34-17. Let's go, Chiefs. Have a great day on Sports Radio 810 WHB.